Good morning, Huntsville! Or wherever you are.
Which may not be morning at all.
And whatever time of day it is where you're viewing or listening right now. Or possibly view-listening. Hey, fun fact for you. I know you saw this, but it's pretty extraordinary. U.S. News and World Report listed the number one city, best city to live in America, was...
Raleigh, North Carolina.
They were in the top 10. Huntsville, Alabama. That's just crazy to me. I think I've lived in Huntsville so long, I take for granted all of the things about Huntsville that I enjoy and that I appreciate. And
they've consistently, even the last several years, been in, magazines or that do that sort of thing. And then now we got this huge amphitheater. I'm talking about the metrics even that they use. Okay, arts and entertainment, which is kind of...
Amphitheater, new baseball stadium. They've updated the Von Braun Center.
Yep.
They've added a new sort of a thing on, Clinton and... Sort of a Broadway theater kind of thing, but that's...
Yep. And then you've got... Again, so much business moving in. Yep. You've got the cost of living so reasonable.
Or at least up until this year.
Well, but that's affecting everybody.
But that's because everyone's moving here.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Stop it, people, okay? Because traffic coming into work this morning at 7 o'clock, Roger, 7 o'clock. It's already bumper to bumper.
The problem is, yes.
It ain't getting better.
Our arteries, roads, are not... able to handle
the infrastructure's not
the infrastructure ain't there. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem.
But I will say this, with the addition of 565 30 years ago, I remember first driving on it when it opened up, because that's in the back of the days when Marlene and I would drive back and forth
yes.
to her parents' house, and
we
came in on Sparkman, because there wasn't any 565.
And okay,
so when that opened up, that created this spur, and no one knew exactly how that's going to work, because it was like, it's a spur thing versus going all the way out
right.
72 to Chattanooga, creating a... anyway,
right.
Just been a fascinating run.
Yeah, and that 565 spur blew up my neighborhood. That's great.
It did. It blew up your neighborhood in a big
divided
time.
Divided our neighborhood and changed the economic dynamics and blah, blah, blah.
Fun fact for you. So I did... Well, that's not a fact, really. Actually, I had a new experience this week, Monday. So came back from I did a corporate outing Saturday, Sunday in the wilderness, Walls of Jericho.
Okay, yeah.
So, and I had 9 packs plus mine. So I had to bring home 10 packs, go through them, take out all the tents, everything out, dry things, cleaning packs and all that. So
people ever leave money or valuables in those bags?
Yes, they do. I have a whole bag that I'm taking back to their company. They have one thing of mine that so we're going to do a trade-off. They have one thing of mine that they can.
I'll hand it to you as you hand me.
No! Whoa! No. So, yeah, but mostly toiletries. That's what I get.
Okay.
I also had 2 flasks of bourbon that were empty.
Oh, my.
But, yeah, you don't want to lose those things. But while I was cleaning all this stuff out, I'll often listen to music or I'll listen to a podcast every now and then.
Okay.
I binged something.
Oh, no.
And I heard, I think, 14 episodes in a row because Facebook does it. I listened to, 14 of Roger's face casts back-to-back.
No.
Did you know it just keeps going? It'll just keep doing them?
I don't know what it does.
Okay, so once I hit one, which I was listening to one for that day, Monday, and then it played the next one, which was Friday, and then it went back Thursday, and then it did Wednesday. I'm like, these are just getting better and better. And I must have listened for 2 hours straight.
I don't recommend this for your emotional health.
No.
What Bruce did is not wise.
It's amazing for your spiritual health. I got so many sermons out of this. I'm like, I could take this 10-minute idea that you put out there and make it into a great 25, 30-minute sermon. I mean, it's really...
Which you could condense into 10 minutes back again.
If I had to, I could boil it right back down to that 10 minutes that we've got. But I just wanted you to know, you have a real gift with words. I know that's God-given.
Okay.
But it's encouraging, it's thought-provoking, it's insightful. Some things you even pointed out about, because that tension we have about, do I love God? And sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. And, if I do love God, why would I sin? And that reality that Well, the very fact that it bothers us that we sin is proof that we love God. But that was so freeing.
The Peter factor.
Right, that was so freeing because I'm like, you know, sometimes I just get so discouraged with myself because I do the wrong thing, say the wrong thing, think the wrong thing. And I, you know, there's that feeling, gosh, yep. If I just loved God. But I realized the very fact that I feel bad about that is a good thing because it's a sign that I love God.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I just wouldn't care.
Right. No, it does grieve you. And
I would do whatever.
Which, again, that was just the beauty. It is the beauty of a Peter weeping bitterly.
Yeah.
At not because he loved.
Right.
It's not so much failure and, oh, I said this in front of a bunch of others and then I didn't follow through. It was, I abandoned, disowned somebody that I love so much in a moment, in a fleeting moment of fear. I just did a very human...
That's the human condition.
the human condition.
Roger and I had a little brief talk about the human condition before we started the podcast, and we think the word is possibly overused. Because now it can be, that's just the human... I mean, everything's the human condition. Which, when you think about it, is true. Because if it involves a human at any level, it's a condition that a human experiences. So we're not going to use that. We're going to use the human journey from now on. I've come up with a new term. It's the human journey.
Yeah, let's see what kind of traction that gets.
Well, Roger, that's just part of the human journey.
All right. It needs some time.
Okay.
It certainly will start growing. Human journey. I'm sure it's just going to start.
No, there was another thing I wanted to say that was so good. Hold it. Wait. What was it?
Oh, no. Okay.
From one of your facecasts. Okay. You keep talking.
Is that what you call it? Facecast?
I call it facecasting because Roger does these Facebook Live videos every single morning for 3 years at 7 a.m.
Monday through Friday. No, I do take the weekend off.
They're very good. I mean, they're very good. I mean, it's like mini sermons. Anyway, it made me think. Made me realize the whole reality of pastors, like pastors retired, which we say that we are, is actually a fallacy. We're still pastoring.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Here's the thing I realized, because they were asking me on the trail this weekend, so what do you pastor? And I'm like, I had to think about it for a minute, because I've been telling people, well, I don't pastor a local church. They're like, where do you pastor? And I said, honestly, I'm sort of an international pastor.
Well, you could say, I'm right here.
Exactly.
I pastor right here.
It is
Walls of Jericho, the Sierras.
The church as a space is just changing, particularly in my world right now. Mm-hmm. I'll be in Peru next month teaching people the way of Christ in the Andes Mountains.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's just crazy. And then Walls of Jericho. I mean, one guy shared after it, because I just do an evening and a morning. He goes, I wish we had that on video. I wish we had those two things on video. I would just love to take those back to my family. And I realized, I'm doing more pastoring, certainly as much pastoring as I've ever done in my life. And so I realize I've got to start thinking differently. I'm not really a retired pastor. I'm a retired local church organizational pastor.
Pastor as occupation.
Well, and here's another thing that had to happen this week that was so interesting. So, I don't know, I'm talking a lot today, but that's okay. Because Roger typically talks a lot, so it's my turn now, and very likely the sound isn't working, because anytime I talk a lot, we have a technical...
Hey, listen,
make sure the mic's on right now.
But here's what we'll say, is you've talked a lot, but you've talked a lot about me, so that balances it out, right?
That's good. So I remember back in the days when we would go to Franklin Road Baptist Church in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Been there.
Okay, where Bob Kelly was pastor, and... Every now and then, you know, Grandpa was on the road, you know, 300 days a year, Grandpa Rice. But every now and then, he would be able to be there for a Sunday night service. And I remember one time, he's sitting there in a Sunday night service, and it's almost like, because you got John R. Rice there, Bob Kelly felt like I should, you know, say something. And so he referenced him at one point. And I just remember as this grandson, just feeling very proud, my grandpa's here, and they just mentioned him in this church thing. And it's just sort of, you know, that's sort of cool. And I realize I'm sort of that guy now. Not in the sense like I was at a meeting for Cove Church over the weekend, because I got back and I was able to do this Sunday evening thing at Cove. But it was funny, since people never see me there very often unless I'm speaking. Right. John actually from the stage mentioned something about, hey, we could do this a whole lot faster if I just had Bruce come up and read the notes. And I just laughed and everyone laughed, but I realized I'm sort of that guy now. You know, where people know maybe I was a teaching pastor there for 40 years,
right.
But they don't see me very often. And it was just sort of a fun moment of of this full circle of, I'm 58 years old.
Right.
I have moments of, because I still feel 38.
Yeah.
No, I really do. It's, you know, and when I was hiking this weekend, I was thinking, I don't feel substantively different hiking and backpacking at 58 than I did at 38.
Yeah.
It's funny, weird.
It's funny you say that, because I'm a couple years down the journey ahead of you, this human journey. I'm at 60. I'm trying to work it in. All right, human journey.
I like that.
Journey.
HJ.
But I was thinking the exact same. I don't know what 60 is supposed to feel like, but and maybe it's just not remembering it a year to point it, but it's like, I feel like I'm doing a lot of the same things. It's not like I have to prove anything at age 60, but even yesterday, I was going up and down the stairs, working at this place where I was picking up some stuff I bought. But I realized I had some of that same kind of thing. I don't feel.
Yeah.
Whatever. My laugh was, I know as a kid, 60 sounded decrepit. I mean, 60 sounded
you're a step away from a walker.
Right. I'm imagining Kane.
Yes.
I'm imagining, and then sitting here at 60, and I realize,
I now understand why Dad. I don't know if you remember that. You know, we used to play football in the front yard on Shalford Road.
Okay.
And Dad and Mom would even play. Mom played. I mean, in one, I remember falling down. And I was afraid, you know, because she was in her 50s. I'm like, oh, she's gonna die, you know. But I remember Dad could still do these jukes, and like, to run the ball,
whoop,
you know, that thing that Dad would do. And I'm like, well, of course he could, because 50 something's not that old,
right?
But in my mind, I'm thinking, there's no way Dad can even make that move, but he just did. I'm like, he's got to be 60. How can he even make that move? You know, and I think he played all the way into his 70s.
Yeah,
you know, and until he reached the point where he literally couldn't see the ball.
Well, right, the eyesight stopped him before
his physical body,
before
did.
Any kind of body aging.
The human journey.
Speaking of the human journey.
Yeah, good segue.
Guess who's going to be golfing next week?
You, me, and Mark. Provided you take my clubs in your van. Since we're driving the teeny tiny car.
Is Zach going to play with us?
I bet he will. I need to tell him. He would love that.
Yes.
I didn't even think about that.
No,
he won't love getting up at 5:30 in the morning. I just need to send him a text right now before I forget. Don't forget to bring your golf clubs. That is great. Hey, and I love, and we're going to get to do some face casts down there. Because normally you include me in a face cast
if we're out on
the golf course.
Yeah. No, there's we can do our golf course cast.
Well, and we'll have to do the podcast from
the
golf course.
This podcast next week could be from a golf course.
Yes.
And the golf course is a great analogy to the human
journey.
I've thought about that. Really, even golf as it relates to spiritual journey. There's so many lessons from walking with Jesus related to golf.
But yes, there are. But here's where the analogy breaks down for me.
talk to me about the analogy falling completely apart.
Okay, so about, let's say, 20 years into my golf journey. I was playing.
HJ.
Yeah, like that. I was playing my best
GJ.
Golf. Okay.
Okay.
Where I could get it into the 70s.
How old were you at that time?
I'm around 40.
Okay, so you're around 40 at that point,
and
you're shooting it sometimes in the 70s.
Yeah, 44. That's when I had my best, like 75, best round.
Hate you.
Yeah, 3 over par and Mark Booth was with me, and it was here in Huntsville at the Huntsville Municipal Course. Interestingly enough, great day. But I realized now my golf is getting worse. So, while I feel substantively the same that I did at 38 on the trail backpacking, I don't feel at all the same on the golf course. When I was 38, I could hit the ball 280 yards. And at some point, more often than not, it was in or around the fairway.
Right.
Now I hit the ball 215 in the weeds. Or in the water. Or in the out of bounds. Or on the highway.
Is it fair to say, however, that you played more often?
I played a lot more often, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So yeah. We talk about the human journey. I would say
good use again.
There is a parallel to when you're putting something into practice, you're going to be...
That's why those 70-somethings at New Smyrna Beach Golf Course could beat you and I like a drum.
Right.
Because they played every day.
Right.
They're going to hit it 150, pitch it on the green, one putt it in.
And what's interesting is, okay, you don't play as often, but you know much more about the game. You know more. There's more nuances, yep, and so on. So we could even make the point probably that playing as little as we do right now to play, to get some reasonable scores in there, is a testament to longevity, having done something for so long, which, again, has its own parallels with sort of the following Jesus journey of... Anyway.
Yeah. I still can't think of that thing I was going to say that was so good from one of your face casts.
I'm so sorry.
I got caught up in something else.
This is totally random, but that's what we do in conversation, so yes. That's what works for the pastards.
Yep.
Speaking of golf and the human journey... Was that a little forced?
No, that was a good segue. I thought the speaking of golf was forced, but the human journey, that fit right in.
So the Masters Golf Champion. Now, you probably know this, but I just saw this. So Scottie Scheffler, is that his name? Okay.
Number one in the world.
Number one in the world in March. In February, had not won a PGA tournament.
It's weird. And then won like three.
Won three out of five. This is what I read. I was not. So goes from unknown, hasn't won.
I knew of him, yeah.
Hasn't won a PGA tournament. Five tournaments later, he's the number one player going into the Masters. And then, for his fourth PGA win, let's just get our first major. I mean, there may be another story like that, but isn't...
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and I'm fairly sure they're probably picking him to win the PGA this week.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, I think he was right.
If Phil was there, he...
That's a whole other story.
Oh, no.
Wow.
That is a...
No.
Because he won the PGA last year at 50.
51.
51? Which is another comment on...
Which is about aging and even what aging is and what aging isn't.
Some things better as you're old. You can't hit as hard. You can't...
Well, Phil Mickelson's actually hitting it longer than he was hitting in his 20s. It's ridiculous how much length he has off the tee right now. Yeah, I mean, so 320, just crazy stuff. But they also wonder if that's going to kill him at some point because there's so much clubhead speed, you know. At what point did your spine go, nope, that part of the human journey is over?
Right. We're going to have to shut you down here.
Mine canceled about 10 years ago. Oh, I feel like I swing just as hard. I just get a whole lot less distance. But it has probably everything to do with how you're hitting the club. So, on to more important things.
Okay.
Speaking of the human journey.
All right.
So,
talk to us.
Reading Jesus and the whole... You can't serve God and money, and then he tells stories, and you know, there's the parable of the rich fool and all of that. But I realized there was this parable, what we call the rich man and Lazarus. And interesting story, and there's so much to it. I mean, this is, for Jesus, this is a very elaborate parable. Think about it's here, and what's happening here, and this juxtaposition between someone who's very wealthy and someone who's very poor.
And the only parable... Where a character has a name.
Has a name. And his name means God helps.
Yep.
Which is interesting. And there's this, I must just say it, weird component of in hell where he's in torment, and in Abraham's bosom where he's in enjoyment, there's, and this gulf in between. In other words, it's this, it's the only parable I remember Jesus talks about this gulf, this chasm between places, destinations, which...
Because that was part of the wording in the parable. There's, yeah. There is this gulf between us.
There's a gulf between us, and it reminded me again of Matthew 25, the king comes, and I don't even think of that as a parable, the sheep and the goats. I think it's just Jesus says, this is how it's going to be.
Right.
Whereas his other parables were, it will be like something.
Okay.
But he's like, this is how it's going to be. The king's going to come, and he's going to separate the nations like sheep and goats based on what did you do, did you care for me. But anyway, what was extraordinary to me, or what I thought about for the first time, was often when we think about helping the poor, helping the marginalized, or helping the vulnerable, or helping, we think of it in the plural. There's all of these poor people. And I realized for me that can become this overwhelming thing.
Yeah, sure.
How can I help the homeless, at plural? How can I help the vulnerable, plural?
Yeah.
How can I help? But this story is simply about there was one person in his life that he had the opportunity to help. Mm-hmm. And the indictment wasn't that he didn't help everyone in the community or fix world hunger, you know, because sometimes I tend to think this how do we fix world poverty? And I think Jesus is saying, Bruce, think about the rich man and Lazarus, the story of one man to one man, and he could have helped the one.
The person at your gate.
Yes.
Which, again, even when we think about that, the person in your context,
yeah,
in your, that you've bumped into, it's such a good word. And for me, it's so timely, Bruce, for right now, because we've already talked about it, but I can't talk about it enough. Because, I'm reading this. I was reading a story briefly this morning from the UK. And it was one of the ministers who is tasked to work with the economically deprived and so on. But he was talking about people in the UK who are semi-living at McDonald's to use restrooms. But he's talking about families.
Yeah.
So people, even where people maybe can't afford their power, so they're coming to get some little bite to eat, perhaps, but they're using the Wi-Fi, they're using the restrooms for toiletry, and just... He said, we're actually running into situations. And so I was just thinking about how much God speaks about a heart for the poor. And we've talked about this numerous times and just how pervasive that was. But in this stretch, I've just been just thinking about our culture. Well, our culture's been doing what's been happening all down through the entire human journey, human history, of the wealthier get wealthier, the poor get poorer.
Yeah, right.
And for all the... And at one level, I'm not saying the church or the way of Jesus hasn't impacted that, but for all the impact of the way of Jesus, this is still a pervasive challenge, even in a culture that has a lot of Christianity built into its roots or those kinds of things, where even again over the last several decades, still you look at the stat, the wealthier getting wealthier, the poor getting poorer, and then you have a pandemic, and then you have what we're hitting now, where inflation is soaring, prices and gas prices, and now here's what. There are people at your gate.
Right.
There are people that desperately need the way of Jesus lived out.
Yeah.
That is not about... Oh, I just love the way you put it. Yeah, helping the poor. It is... It's not taking on the...
It's helping the person.
Where can I...
Yeah.
Yes.
Where is there a person at your gate?
Where's... What a great prayer that would be. God, okay, I do want to live out your heart that comes out so often in the prophets, so often in the apostles, so often in your words. I want to live that out. Who is? I don't want to be the person in that parable. Who is the person at my gate?
Well, and I was, this has never happened. I've been in this office 5.5 years now. But I actually had someone come to this door. I had the door open. I had a person come from this to this door from the Russell Erskine Apartments. Just needing help with a prescription. It was interesting. But I realized, we're going to see a ton of this right now. With inflation, everything's harder to get.
Yeah.
I mean, so food's going to cost me this. My prescription might actually stay stable in terms of its amount. But because food costs have gone, and other things are going up, and I can't even talk about gas and all that. And I realized this is a person at my gate right now. I was thinking, and this is what I wanted to really challenge listeners to potentially pray about doing. Becoming a pen pal or connecting with someone in prison.
You've done that.
Well, and I'm doing it right now for one person, and have been for a while.
Oh, is it the same gal?
No.
Oh,
she passed.
She passed. That's right. Yes.
But there was another person that... another young man who was in prison connected me to, and so I sent him my book, and so we've been going back and forth. Anyway, we've continued connecting for 3 years now. In fact, when he was out, I actually took him to his parole officer, and we tried to work some things out and some other things. But I realized what was interesting about it, because he'll write me more often than I write him, partly because he has less to do.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but his letters were just so encouraging. And he would say something like, "You're the only one I have on the outside." And I'm like, that can't possibly be. All that to say, you and I can't write every person in prison and provide help for them, but you can for one.
Right.
You can for one. And I realize it matters. And what if every, when you think about the incarceration rate in the United States, what if every follower of Jesus just said, I'm just going to find a way to connect. There's a lot of ways to do this prison ministry opportunities, even becoming pen pals. I'm just going to connect with one person in prison and begin writing them and helping them out with needs, because there's a lot of needs that they have. There's ways that they can get food and clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Just all these different things that we take for granted, but they have to buy those. It's an interesting, it's a very interesting, all that to say. I was just struck with, because sometimes I feel, you know, I'm not doing enough. Gosh, there's so much need and it's overwhelming. And I'm like, no. Jesus said, if you just help even one of the least of these, offer a cup of cold water in my name to one person.
Okay.
And he says it in such a way, with such emphasis, you will certainly not lose your reward.
Yeah.
In other words, that this matters for eternity. This one little thing for this one little person matters for eternity and affects your eternity in terms of... So anyway, it's just a reminder of, don't let ourselves get overwhelmed by global poverty and even the war in Ukraine and all that. It's interesting, a friend I just saw on Facebook is going over to do trauma counseling in the Ukraine right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about front lines.
Wow.
And she's going to be there for 2 weeks. It's like, but she's doing what she can do in this season, you know, with the skill set that she has. But for me, and maybe there's other listeners like me, I can get overwhelmed with there's so much need. I'm just not doing enough, I'm not helping enough. But then I'm like, no, if I help one person, and if every follower of Christ helps one person, everyone that has need gets helped.
Right. Well, and it's the beautiful... Right. All of us starting somewhere, and again, we've talked about that, of we're even just getting started. Sometimes something feels so big.
Right.
We talk about, just start moving. Well, starting moving is find one person at your gate. Find one look for... Because it struck me even while you were talking, even Jesus' words about the least of these.
Yeah.
That feels like it's this big encompassing, there's so many. And so now he lists all these, so it is people in prison. It is the immigrant. It is people who don't have clothing. It is people who don't have... food and water, and it is those who are sick. Why not, instead of taking that as this lump, the least of these, a sick person who needs company, a person in prison who needs a letter or a visit, someone who, and I guess I would encourage as much to make it as personal as a letter, something beyond simply taking a box of clothes down to a thrift store where you're, which I'm again not saying there's no place for that, but it has the, you're able to meet the person at your gate. You're able to interact with, because the relational contact, one of the pieces of gold I'm certain from writing someone in prison is just understanding more the story of people in prison. This is what, of course, I've learned, you know, living in a neighborhood among people who've grown up financially very differently than I did growing up, who have far fewer resources and options, who are, in my case, often knocking at the door, or there's some kind of contact. But you start learning about a whole different world. And what's funny is that contact with the one person at your gate is going to give you a greater perspective about the imprisoned, the marginalized, the person whose skin color is different than mine, the person whose bank balance is different than mine, the person whose sexual orientation is different than mine, and the person whose country of origin is different from mine.
Right.
And then you start interacting. Well, then you watch what, starting with the one, then you watch where God takes that. Once you start understanding the heart of the one, that person is now, and this is what's fascinating, this is why God may take your little reaching out to one person at the gate, he may expand to that to something far greater. It wouldn't surprise me, let's say, this gal who's going to Ukraine. I wonder when her first step was, that first step towards walking with someone in trauma, that first step towards someone at her gate that has now turned into, I don't know that she had a plan.
No, right.
You know, years out, I'm going to be going to
foreign countries,
war-torn countries, and but this is where starting with one person at your gate, can then watch what God does with that.
Yeah. And it's like you've said for years, you can't steer a parked car.
Right.
And we can become paralyzed by the enormity of need.
One of the reasons the car is parked is the least of these are everywhere.
Yeah.
The desperate need is everywhere. But I love this word. What about that person at your gate? And even that the accountability was not that you didn't...
There was no indictment that he wasn't addressing worldwide poverty.
Right. As wealthy as he was,
he might have been able to make a dent there.
Right.
It was the one person at his gate that he saw. You can't miss him. You're going to see him every day, and it's that whole story. All that to say, I was strangely encouraged by the reality.
Yeah, I love that
we can help one person and not be overwhelmed by the need that's global, and that matters to the heart of God. I mean, that is what it means to follow the way of Christ. Because there are certain things that I do give to that are more global in their efforts. They're broader in their efforts. But that's often helping to pay for the staff of the organization that's doing that work, sometimes that's doing the work that mm-hmm. they're doing. Anyway, all that to say, that was one of my human journey thoughts for the day.
I had this weird connection back to golf, which is where my brain
back to golf. You really are looking forward to golf this year, aren't you? This is going to be Rodgers' year to beat Bruce again and again and again, over and over again.
With a massive handicap, I can beat Bruce once a year. I think my handicap is 84.
It's close. It's a lot, not gonna lie. It's a lot of strokes.
It's a big number.
It's a big number. It's more than you think.
No, I was thinking... let's hope that I can remember what I was thinking, or maybe I don't need to. No, I was thinking, the one thing with golf, and you've been great about this, you are great with this, because I still have not learned to play. Bruce actually knows how to play. I still am desperately in need of instruction. But the one thing Bruce is great about is giving me...
I know what you're going to say.
One thing.
Yeah.
It's not, You know, because I have been around.
I could actually pick out 12 things that Roger's doing wrong on any given swing.
Right.
I'm not going to lie.
No. It's just every now and then I look out of the corner of my eye before I take a swing, and Bruce is wincing. Nice use of wince. Huh?
He's got his head in his hands. God,
don't let him be killed by this swing.
Or I'm moving the cart back in case he shanks it directly right.
And as he's moving, I'm thinking, I'm not sure it's physically possible for me to get it back.
Roger,
yet he believes. He believes.
You hit the ball, and the ball ended up going behind you. And while that was physically impossible, I watched it happen. The ball went up, spun backwards over your head.
And killed a squirrel.
Behind us. So I'm like, I really don't actually need to be. I need a fully enclosed golf cart.
There's no safe place.
When I'm with Roger that's got the. There's no safe place.
I just tell you right now.
Have you ever hit the ball
like right before
on your backswing?
This will give you context for my game. Before I swing, Bruce always yells four about 2 seconds before.
It's preemptive.
Preemptive. Just warning anyone in the vicinity. Four!
Oh, that's...
For you people who don't know golf, four is what you call out when you think the ball you just hit is in danger of striking somebody.
Could kill somebody. Four means watch out.
Duck.
Duck.
Pay attention. A projectile may be coming your direction.
Well, the temptation for some people is to look up, which is what you don't want to do.
You'll take your eye out.
Cover the back of your head and your skull so that, you know.
This is the proper, when you hear the word four, this is the proper.
Right, the proper response. You don't want a traumatic
head between your
injury.
Knees. Not, what?
Roger and I see that a lot on the golf courses. I yell four 2 seconds before he hits the ball. It's actually, and he hasn't even started his backswing.
It used to be distracting. I'm just used to it now.
It's actually how Roger begins his transition to the downstroke.
Four.
Right.
Four.
Oh, that's good. Oh, I wish I could think of that important thing you said in your face cast.
No, well... Well, this isn't going to help, I'm sure.
So good.
Now we get talking about my golf swing, which even calling it a swing is a bit generous.
That's right. It's a golf. It's a golf swat.
It's a mauling.
A golf slash. It's a golf.
It's abusive.
It's a golf debacle. How does a person swing a scythe?
So, if I'm coming back. But the great thing is, all these things that you could see, that you could say...
Oh, we didn't even get to your point.
No, this is the great thing of finding one thing, just the beauty of... Even if we're trying to... We can be sometimes overwhelmed by... There's so many parts of the way of Jesus I'm missing. I mean, in other words, it's so... And you can get paralyzed by that as well. But again... What's one thing to correct? And again, this is where Bruce is great. Because I've played golf with people who put on a teacher's hat. And they want to tell you 42 things to think about while you're over that ball.
Which is entirely helpful. Super helpful.
No, it's why you need to yell four before I swing. Because if I'm thinking about too many things... But Bruce will simply say, okay, all you're thinking about is... Keep your eye on the ball. But notice every now and then that you're just keep your eye on the ball. Now, holes later, there may be something else he throws in. But
my singular thought that you don't know because I don't speak it is the end of the Physician's Creed, above all, do no harm. Just try not to kill yourself or anyone else.
I'm going to whisper a prayer. And yell four.
A golfer's prayer. You ought to write that. That would be good. Roger wrote a poem this morning and did an ode to Rich Mullins as a part of his face cast. It was really good.
That is true.
And
I did
was
do
like,
that.
How does he do that? You know, the mind of the artist, the creative. I'm creative about certain things. So I don't diminish that. Although I'm less creative than you are. I'm more the guy that...
He's like creative in different...
If Van Gogh does an original, I do the knockoffs. I mean, I'm using your stuff all the time. Let's face it.
It's a great compliment.
It is. No, but I just enjoyed that. And the fact that you and Ben are doing a poetry prompt, I just love that. I'm like, what could Zach and I do? I can't. I don't do poetry. He's a songwriter.
Right.
I can't. I should say I don't write songs. I hate to say that I can't. I suppose I could labor, and get something out.
No, you...
It'd probably sound more like a limerick.
A ditty.
A ditty. Also,
all of Bruce's songs start with roses, poetry. Roses are red, violets are blue.
And then I finish
I'm
it
not a
better
poet,
than you.
And neither are you. I don't know.
I don't know. It's good. It's,
but yeah, no, so poetry may not be... What could be a thing? But it is fun.
Well,
but then you wonder your kids, like, there's another... Like, my daughter Carrie, we're reading a book together. Sort of, okay, reading chapters. And so then we can kind of interact.
Zach and I are doing mini bikes together.
Ooh.
I did the funnest thing on Monday. So I had half a day off Monday after I listened to, like, 14 episodes in a row of Roger.
And you needed a break.
And I finished my work. I took the mini bike and I just took everything apart on that bad boy and got the governor off of it. That sucker will fly now. So a governor, if you don't know what a governor is.
There's one on your car.
Yeah. What happens is you accelerate and it accelerates really fast. And then once you get to a certain speed, it goes and just levels out. It won't let you go past 24 miles an hour, which that's no fun. Because you start off so fast and then it levels out and you're like, oh, what just happened? So I took off the governor, which meant I took off the gas tank, had to take off the carburetor, had to take off all the parts around it.
Zach must have been so proud.
Oh, he doesn't even know yet, but I told him I was going to do it.
Okay.
Because we were riding around at my house last weekend.
So you're telling me you have a mini bike?
Yeah, and he has a little pit bike, which is a 4-speed small motorcycle, small dirt bike. But he's leaving me in the dirt because we come out of the turn, I'm right with him, and all of a sudden mine just levels out, and he just keeps accelerating.
No more.
No more. That sucker goes 35 miles an hour now. And sounds like a bomb's about to go off. I do know from experience, if you take off the governor and you do it full on all the time, a piston comes out of the engine.
Okay.
It's not good. Well, actually, the piston stays under. It's usually a rod that comes out. Breaks a big hole, oil going everywhere. I've done it multiple times. Anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. But what was fun about it was... It was like the first day off I'd had in a while after I got all the gear cleaned.
Yeah,
okay, I don't want to do work. I don't want to do something productive. I just want to do something fun. I'm like, I want to take that governor off that mini bike. And took the whole thing apart. And Marlene had rolled in about 4:30 and the whole thing's apart. She's like, well, what time is dinner? I'm like, as soon as I finish this. But after I finished it, it actually worked. And it was just, of course, anytime I fix something mechanical and it works, I'm always surprised. You know, because once I was like, this is not going
to
work.
I used to be surprised, but now you've actually, you've kind of got a trend going.
It's true. So what can we leave our, I almost said readers with, listeners with today? Maybe a poem or a limerick.
A poem.
Instead.
Roses are red, violets are blue, help just one person. Don't think about a few.
I was going to say something more. That was bad.
It was bad. Really bad.
Help the one without helping a ton.
I like that. That's a good finish. Yeah.
That was the most patronizing thing you've ever said in my human journey.
It was cute.
So, until...
That was adorable.
Until next week, when we'll be joining you live from...
From a golf course... Maybe.
Well, either New Smyrna Beach or Delray. I don't even know where we are.
Oh, we were
Titusville?
What?
Mims. The golf course is in Mims, Florida.
Oh, the Mims.
Okay. The Mims, Florida course. We will be back with a talk.
Probably.
Lord willing.
Yeah. Matt. Yeah.
Oh.
Good to see you.
It's the worst thing we've ever done, Raj. I just felt like I rambled.